That was a segment from Romeo and Juliet by Prokofiev, and our opening music is also taken from that that composition. It's the section called Tybalt. That's our opening theme music. Okay, Bob, do we have a call?
No
call. Okay.
Anyone like to call? The number is 412-621-9728 off campus and 268-621 on campus. Sorry, excuse me, 268-9728 on campus. So if the next topic of discussion, I'd like to talk about the recent reports from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and from the Army War College about the war in Iraq. So we don't need to say anything more, really, about the situation there. As far as we know it, we have about 150,000 troops, 130,000 troops in Iraq at the moment, and there are daily killings. We're now over 500 American soldiers dead. There have been further attacks over the weekend. There was a direct suicide bombing attack on the U.S. headquarters in Baghdad, and there have been demonstrations over the weekend and so on. So, you know, we've been promised, of course, that we wouldn't have to deal with anything like this. Instead, we would have the jubilant Iraqis would be throwing roses at our feet and would be just delighted to have the U.S. invade and take over the country. So this is somewhat the state of affairs. Things has been in a stalemate for quite some time now, it seems. And so the question is to evaluate what's happening. So the most important thing, of course, or the most prominent thing, I would say, that's come out of all of this is, well, where are the vaunted weapons of mass destruction? What do you think, Danny? Where are they?
Well, it looks like there weren't any. It looks like Kamal Hussein, was that his name? Kamal, who testified before the CIA that he was
Kamal, yes.
He said they destroyed everything in the early 90s, and apparently he was telling the truth. Of course, he had no reason to lie at that point. So
there's an interesting question. And of course, what the administration is doing is a combination of tactics. One is to subtly change the justifications for the war after the fact. So we've gone through a number of justifications. One of which is to change the phrasing from weapons of mass destruction to weapons programs, because you see something that's so abstract as a weapon program or thoughts of a weapon program is much easier to claim. Is the case. But you'll notice that this week the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace released a report analyzing the war in Iraq. And one of the points that was mentioned there, which I think we have also mentioned here on Left Out, is the fact that the threats that were posed by Iraq with respect to nuclear and chemical weapons, to quote the report, is the extent of the threat was largely knowable at the time. There was no mistaking what was going on. Well, I think we have a caller, so maybe we'll interrupt here a bit, and we'll be happy to entertain a call. Go ahead, please.
Hello?
Yes?
Hi, this is Paul in Idrid.
Hi.
So I'm very amazed and alarmed by the revelations of this book by Ron Suskind.
All right. Go ahead.
That's a topic on our list. Thank you for bringing that up.
Sure. So the Price of Loyalty book that Paul O'Neill helped with, I think it's quite amazing, although not entirely surprising, that we learn that Bush really does not have a handle on the issues, that the White House seems to be almost entirely politically driven and not policy driven. It's really quite a contrast to the Clinton administration.
Well, I think that's the case. The thing that was, I have to say, I was even surprised to the extent to which everything that I and many people of similar views have thought from the beginning is quite literally the case. That, for example, that the planning for the invasion of Iraq and deposing Saddam Hussein started long before 9/11, which means, of course, that all of the justifications in terms of terrorism and weapons of mass destruction and all the other nonsense was pure purely fabricated in order to justify a predetermined outcome. That was clear already because of the existence of the PNAC, the document, the Project for New American Century, which is clearly being put into operation here.
Right. Well, it was interesting to hear some of the reaction from the White House last week to the O'Neill and Susskind book. They were saying things like, well, you know, Clinton had this policy of regime change before Bush came to office, so we were just continuing that policy.
Mm-hmm.
So for a change, you know, Bush is using the excuse of we're just like Clinton as a justification for his actions.
Right. Well, I think the other part, which is much more characteristic of these guys, is the character assassination. So they were, of course, claiming that Paul O'Neill as well. You know, he's sour grapes. He got fired. All sorts of things. You know, he's an idiot anyway, or we never paid any attention to him, and so forth and so on, without, of course, addressing the actual facts of the allegations.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you said, Paul, you said it was quite amazing but not surprising. I guess those two things seem to you seem to be contradicting yourself, but anyway, the thing is it is that we all felt that Bush was really a very really lame, really pretty much an imbecile. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Pretty lame in terms of his knowledge, his interest in things, his abilities in just about any category that's relevant to the presidency. So it isn't surprising that Well, it turns out that's the case, and
right.
Paul O'Neill just testifies to that stuff. We all conjectured it, but now, well, okay, it turns out to be true.
Right. Well, I think it's amazing to hear it sort of put so clearly from someone on the inside, you know, which is the kind of reporting that we really haven't been hearing from the Bush White House because they're so secretive. I was just reading today that Bush has held something like 11 press conferences in his first 3 years in office, and other presidents in that time held somewhere between 30 and 70 press conferences. So he's sort of the you know, minimal communication president, the maximal security president.
Well, it's pretty apparent why. I mean, he's the empty vessel into which these so-called neocons can pour their policies. He's just the pitch man, the front man, the genial character who you know, goes in front of the cameras and smiles and waves and thinks he's really clever. And really, it's obvious from O'Neill's comments and also from other evidence that it's really Cheney who's running the show,
right?
Along with Rumsfeld.
Yeah, it sounded like Cheney and Rove were running the show to me.
So that's quite a unsurprising, but nevertheless, as you say, shocking
well,
observation.
It makes me hope that no unfortunate accident befalls George Bush, because you know, if Bush is bad, just think how bad Cheney as president would be.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, that's a sobering thought.
I don't know about that. I mean, can Cheney is, as a face to put on it, do you think he's sellable to the voters? I don't know.
Well, yeah, he would have to do a sales job. He hasn't been doing
so, of course, this would happen after the election for maximum effect.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, well, thank you very much for those comments. It was certainly, certainly worth making. It's a really disturbing indictment of our excuse for a president.
Okay. Thank you. I really like your show.
I appreciate it. Thanks. So anyway, going back, we're looking over the report from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, in which they make a number of claims as a result of their investigations, including the knowability of the falsehood of these claims. We discussed this on the last Truth Out in October, that, for example, the things that Powell was saying before the UN were risible even at the time. It was perfectly obvious that these were just phony allegations, and indeed that's what the Carnegie Endowment's report says. They also say quite plainly there was and is no solid evidence of a cooperative relationship between Saddam's government and al-Qaeda. Well, that was another knee slapper. Like, that was completely fabricated conveniently to try to pin some sort of, you know, make Saddam Hussein into a bad guy, which, of course, Saddam Hussein is a bad guy, but he was the bad guy that we created and that we put there.
Right. So we all knew he was a bad guy, but the conduct, well, the war in every aspect of it was in my view, an outrage from the the lies that were told to the inept handling of the initial invasion and the security, the looting that went on, to the inability to fix things, to the bidding, the no bid contracts that they're just going to waste, you know, billions of dollars.
Oh, it goes on and on.
Right.
Yeah, another point that I wanted to mention from the Carnegie Report is the administration officials systematically misrepresented the threat of Iraq's WMD and ballistic missile program beyond the intelligence failures noted above by, and a number of items, treating nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons as a single WMD threat, thereby by conflating these distinct threats and their different dangers, you distort the cost-benefit analysis, insisting without evidence, yet treating as a given truth that Saddam Hussein would give whatever WMD he possessed to terrorists, routinely dropping caveats, probabilities, and expressions of uncertainty in intelligence assessments, and misrepresenting inspectors' findings in ways that turn threats from minor to dire. Well, doesn't that just about sum it up?
Yeah, excellent. So this is Left Out on WRCT 88.3 FM. The phone number here is 412-268-9728. Please give us a call, and if you want to argue with us and complain about our biases, go ahead and do that. We'll be glad to respond. We may cut you off, but we may listen. We'll first listen to you for a few minutes.
Yeah. Well, speaking of biases, there's also another thing from the liberal media. Is a report from the Army War College by Dr. Jeffrey Record, the Army War College being a well-known bastion of liberalism in the United States, released a report this week called "Bounding the Global War on Terrorism," in which the upshot of the analysis is that the attacks on Iraq were nothing other than a distraction that did nothing to diminish the threats of terrorism, and actually have done everything to increase it, the threat of terrorism. So that's an interesting as well. This is from the Army War College. This is someone whose job is to do these kind of analyses for the sake of the government.
Yeah, it's certainly.
And here he is, you know, no doubt, a far left, probably a communist, working at the Army War College, who is saying these outrageous, yet true things.
It's very hard. I mean, it's getting harder and harder to dismiss these complaints about the Bush administration coming from people like Paul O'Neill and Jeffrey Record, who are not exactly from the left. We have a call. Go ahead.
I wanted to say, with the Ron Suskind book, with the administration's response to it, the other day I heard Tom DeLay say something about a speech that Ted Kennedy gave at a think tank.
Yeah, that was a couple days ago.
Yeah, he was saying this about, you know, the lies about the weapons of mass destruction and whatnot, and Tom DeLay's response was that it was a hateful and disgusting attack on the commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
But he had no points to make. That's all he had to say. You know, and this is how the administration operates. You don't get any kind of response. They don't attempt to refute the points that people make. They just say that it's unpatriotic to attack the commander-in-chief like that. And I think that's so disturbing.
This is one of the most disturbing aspects of this administration, is that they will broach no criticism and they will resort to any methods to deal with anyone who does criticize them. We'll come back to that in a moment by revisiting what has been happening with the case with Joseph Wilson and his wife, Valerie Plame or Plame, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name. We'll come back to that later, but we know from that when he exposed Cheney's lies with regard to the acquiring uranium for Niger, that the result was to commit a first-class felony of exposing his wife as a CIA operative, which, with great irony, turns her specialty was investigating proliferation of weapons of mass destruction.
You know what? Cheney, though, I think Cheney is a pretty despicable person, but Karl Rove is the person that really worries me in the administration. Because Cheney, I mean, he's almost invisible, but Rove has absolutely no accountability whatsoever. I mean, no one voted him into office. Cheney was at least voted into office with Bush. Rove just kind of sits back and does God knows what. I mean, it's just Yeah. It's frightening.
Not to mention Donald Rumsfeld or Paul Wolfowitz or Richard Perle or Kenneth
Edelman, or
Condoleezza Rice or all of these unelected officials who are obviously calling the shots.
But I think Rove is not so much deciding what to do, what the policy is. He's just the guy who runs the PR machine that allows them to cover up and to deflect criticism so they can go ahead and cut taxes to the rich and give the money to Halliburton and start, you know, wars and stuff like that that Cheney and Rumsfeld want to do.
Yeah, but you know, I think Rove, you know, a decision like to, you know, we were starting to, you know, try and get some kind of ties with Cuba, and then the way that we completely pull back from them, a decision like that, I think, is completely Karl Rove's doing.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with...
No, it's just the number of
votes. That's not a policy decision. That's solely just to get Florida votes.
Yeah, it's the number of votes in Florida, absolutely, because of the Cuban-American community there. Well, I think you're absolutely right, to be honest. So, thank you for your call. I appreciate your listening.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
So, anyway, thanks for the callers. If you wish to call, that's 412-621-9728 or 268-9728 on campus. So, enough about the surprising allegations of fraud in Iraq from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and from the Army War College. The last caller raised the issue of the smear campaigns and the attacks on any criticism of the policies of our government. And so the most I mentioned a moment ago that last time on Truth Out we spent quite a bit of time
left out,
referring to one of my sources, truthout.org on the web, that we spent quite a lot of time talking about the Joseph Wilson Valerie Plame case. So what's been happening here, the biggest development so far in that is for months and months really nothing happened. John Ashcroft was investigating investigating the White House, investigating his own buddies to figure out who leaked this information. And bearing in mind, as I said earlier, this is a first-class felony. This is a major crime. And so finally, it seems that it's not clear exactly why, but it seems that something is going on because Ashcroft is now named a guy named Fitzgerald, who is one of Ashcroft's employees. He's a U.S. prosecutor in Chicago, as a special prosecutor to lead the probe. Well, at first glance, that seems like a good move. I mean, it's rather late in the game to be doing that, but at least he's doing that. And one suspects, perhaps, that it's even because Karl Rove is behind the leak, maybe. The reasoning being that Karl Rove was Ashcroft's campaign manager in Missouri for his last failed election campaign for the Senate in Missouri, in which he was defeated by a dead man, Mel Carnahan. So there may be a connection there. So Ashcroft has recused himself, as they say, and been replaced by Patrick Fitzgerald. Well, that's all well and good. But the interesting thing is that the United States government, the Justice Department's, I was stumbling over that, the Justice Department's policies for appointment of special counsels specifically state, and I'll quote, "The special counsel shall be selected from outside the United States government." So what is going on here? I mean, this guy Fitzgerald now, by all accounts, is a highly reputable man, a very effective U.S. attorney in Chicago, who a man of the highest integrity, I have no doubts. But Ashcroft is still his boss, and he's investigating the White House and thereby extension investigating Ashcroft if any of these connections, in fact, are true. If, for example, there were a connection between Karl Rove and the leaker, then we have a connection with Ashcroft. So what is going on here? Is this yet another cover-up by the administration?
Well, one can only hope that it's not, but there's not much basis for that.
Well, the thing that's really amazing about all of this, though, like all of these other stories we pointed out, is how little coverage there is of this. I mean, by and large, the press reported this as there's now a special prosecutor. That's really good. But, you know, if you look a little bit under the surface, it starts to seem a bit, seems to be a little bit shaky. Or we'll have to see what's going on. But more than just the press, I mean, the press is failing us grossly, and that's a really a terrible situation that the United States faces at the moment. But the other thing is, where are the Democrats? You know, why is this, are they not just jumping up and down, screaming about this, and creating as much noise as possible? Nothing is going on. So,
yeah. I don't have an answer to that.
I think it's just
Well, you know what but you know, for example, what happens with when Tom Daschle, whenever he says something, he gets death threats and stuff. Doesn't that happen a few months ago? He was they exaggerated what he said in ridiculous proportions and got beat up by the media for saying some very mild things relative to what was going on.
Well, there's no accounting for kooks who might be giving, calling in death threats, but that's a crime, and I assume that can be dealt with as such. I don't know about that, but it's you're suggesting that that's the reason why the Democrats are.
I don't know. I don't have the sources in front of me, but I think he was trashed on the mainstream right media such as Fox and CNN and other networks. And all the, you know, Wall Street Journal and all those places.
Right.
So I had another comment to make, regarding the media. There was an interesting campaign put on by MoveOn.org to it's called Bush in 30 Seconds, and they asked people, their members and anybody wanted to could submit a 30-second commercial critical of the Bush and the war and what's going on, and so they got several thousand submissions, and everybody was allowed to view them and vote on them and decide which ones were the best. And they're actually going to air these on the winners of this, this competition on national TV. And there's some really excellent ads, and I highly recommend going to MoveOn.org and looking for a link there to view the ads. Some of them are hilarious and really satisfying to watch. But there was a funny incident where one of the ads had compared Bush to Hitler by just quoting things that Hitler said and quoting things that Bush said, and noting that, boy, these things are really, there's a lot of similarity here. So this ad was one of the winning ads. It was just submitted by some random person, and the Republican National Committee noticed this, and they started raving about how this MoveOn.org was equating Hitler to Bush and how outrageous this was, and these guys are, crazy nuts and blah, blah, blah. And, of course, this ad was not even produced by MoveOn. It was simply there on the website, and it was not one of the winning ones or anything. But they did pull the ad as a result of this criticism, and it's not one of the winners, of course. But then, meanwhile, the media was criticizing, like Fox News was going, jumping all over themselves, criticizing MoveOn for this terrible, terrible thing that went on for days doing this. Meanwhile, in the New York Post, which is also owned by the News Corporation, meanwhile had a editorial that equated his name, editorial by a guy named Ralph Peters, who was trying to equate Hitler with Howard Dean, and this went on, through all these ridiculous comparisons between Dean and that is really a ridiculous comparison. But in any event, even if you believed it wasn't ridiculous, there's still this utter hypocrisy where you on the one hand you can't do it to Bush, but on the other hand you can do it to Howard Dean. So it's just an example of the ridiculous right-wing media that we have in this country.
Well, there are no principles at stake here. There's just politics, techniques for getting reelected, and these people have no respect for basic ideas like freedom of speech, and they would happily suppress any speech that doesn't agree with their own opinions. That's the danger.
By the way, the MoveOn ads, the winning ad was going to be shown on the Super Bowl. They had the money, and they were trying to get it aired, but. I guess the NFL decided, or the network decided, they weren't going to allow them to air.
CBS Network.
CBS Network wouldn't let them put the ad on because it's an issue. It was an issue ad, and they don't allow issue ads. And they also apparently banned wouldn't allow an animal rights ad that was trying to convince people to be vegetarians and stuff. So it wasn't just the MoveOn ads that were blocked.
Right. I guess the issue here, so to speak, is what is an issue. So they were, they decided that the political advertising by MoveOn or from the, from which organization was it, did you say?
Oh, the Animal Rights.
Were issues, but it turns out that the White House has an ad in the running during the Super Bowl, which is equating the war on drugs with the war on terrorism. So is that an issue? Is that a political ad? Knowing this administration, I would say there is nothing but.
Do we take a small break and look for some more calls?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. Again, the phone number is 412-621-9728 or 268-9728.